The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What happens when the warmth of the sun fades and icy shadows rise in the east? Frodo and friends are about to find out. Welcome to Lore of the Rings. This is episode number 165, Death and the Downs, part one of our exploration of J.R.R. Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring, chapter 8, called Fog on the Barrow Downs. I'm Aaron, your host and fellow Middle-earth wanderer. Be sure to hit that follow button so you don't miss out on any new episodes, especially with Rings of Power Season 2 coming out soon. As of this recording, you won't want to miss out on all the lore breakdowns and reviews I'll be sharing with you. Now, let's wander. Let's check the map and remember where we've been for today's tale. We've been analyzing each chapter of Tolkien's Fellowship of the Ring. We've just completed the chapter called In the House of Tom Bombadil. Frodo and his friends have been attempting a shortcut through the Old Forest on their way to Rivendell, but they ran into trouble, although they did find refuge with the mysterious character of Tom Bombadil. After a few days and nights of rest, the hobbits are ready to continue their journey, and that's where we pick up with them today. Let's start with the chapter title, Fog on the Barrow Downs. What are Barrow Downs? According to Christopher Snyder in his book, The Making of Middle-earth, quote, the insular tradition of burials accompanied by prestige goods under mounds or barrows stretches from the Neolithic to the Viking Age. So a barrow is a mound or hill in which someone of importance would be buried. This was an ancient practice dating back to the historic times that Tolkien was familiar with. Beyond that, though, Christopher even provides some sites of possible inspiration for Tolkien, including, quote, on the border of Oxfordshire are several ancient monuments, including a single and oddly shaped megalith, the Kingstone, a small group of standing stones that once formed the entrance to a Neolithic chamber tomb, and an impressive stone circle. Think something like Stonehenge, but probably not as extensive. Now, what are downs? A down is an old word for hill. It comes from the Old English word dune, meaning a hill or hill fort. You can still find some places that use that word, including the South Downs. Those are those chalk-like hills with the white cliffs on the south coast of England. Putting those together, the Barrow Downs are a region of hills and burial mounds. By the way, the book I just referenced, The Making of Middle-earth, is a beautiful and rich overview of Tolkien's life and inspiration for his stories. I highly recommend it. Find a link to purchase it at this episode's webpage, ringspodcast.com/165. Wait, let's back up two chapters. In the Old Forest, the hobbits attempt to cut through the thick woods next to the Shire. Then they rested at Tom Bombadil's house on Goldberry's washing day, the day when the River Daughter sang her rain songs. Now we are about to explore a chapter about the Barrow Downs, a region of hills. Do you see the pattern? Even in how these chapters are structured, Tolkien is reinforcing the idea that Tom is the master. The master, as Goldberry says, quote, of wood, water, and hill. That pattern has appeared in so many places that we've explored in the last few episodes just in these three chapters, but I simply can't accept that it's a simple coincidence. Pretty cool stuff, right? Well, let's zoom in on the first paragraph. Here we find another of Frodo's dreams. I think this is the third or fourth dream that Frodo has experienced, and they all reveal something just a little bit interesting, so we'll be taking a look at these as we go on. There'll be a lot more as the story continues. In his dream, he hears singing, and the song seems to open a vision in his mind of, quote, a pale light behind a gray rain curtain, and growing stronger to turn the veil all to glass and silver. And skipping along a little, quote, a far green country opened before him under a swift sunrise. I want to pause on this for just a moment. At first, this passage reminded me of what Gandalf has to say to Pippin about death in the Return of the King movie. He says it a little differently, quote, the gray rain curtain of this world rolls back, and all turns to silver glass. And then you see it, white shores, and beyond. A far green country under a swift sunrise. Gandalf shares this with Pippin as an encouragement that death is not the end, but the beginning of a new journey. He, Gandalf, having died and been sent back to finish the task of defeating Sauron. Both he and Pippin seem to share an uplifting moment as they contemplate the inevitable death that they both will experience. It's a beautiful and positive scene. This idea is important for you and I to remember as we journey through The Lord of the Rings. The theme of death, or mortality and immortality, is a constant theme all throughout Tolkien's works. Death is the primary difference between men and the elves, and thus provides entirely different worldviews and motivations, something that Rings of Power Season 1 seems to have forgotten. But lest you think the film writers simply invented this connection between these lines and the passage of a soul through death, then I want to give you a spoiler. I want to point out a passage that is near the end of The Lord of the Rings. I'm talking like 3 or 4 paragraphs before the final words of the entire novel. It'll be a year or so before we look at this chapter, but I want to point out an interesting phrase. This chapter is called The Grey Havens, and Frodo has embarked on the final ship leaving Middle-earth. Merry, Pippin, and Sam have stayed behind. The ship passes into the west, meaning onto the straight course to Valinor, the realm of the immortal gods of Middle-earth. At this point, quote, Frodo smelled a sweet fragrance on the air, and heard the sound of singing that came over the water. And then it seemed to him that, as in his dream in the house of Bombadil, the grey rain curtain turned all to silver glass, and was rolled back, and he beheld white shores, and beyond them, a far green country under a swift sunrise. Here, at the end, Frodo passes from the world of mortality into the land of the immortal. His dream from the first paragraph of this chapter comes to pass in reality as he passes into the afterlife. This imagery, the silver glass being rolled back as one passes through death, also appears in my absolutely number one most favorite song from the Lord of the Rings films, Into the West. I'm not kidding when I say it is my favorite song. I have specific instructions that this song be sung at my funeral service. I won't break the whole song down right now, but it is generally a positive view of death and the idea of immortality. One line stands out to me, as it seems to be inspired by this dream Frodo had before leaving the house of Tom Bombadil. It goes like this, quote, And all will turn to silver glass, a light on the water, all souls pass. Gray ships pass into the west. Ooh, even just saying that out loud brings chills to my spine. This all leads up to the idea of what I said before. The Lord of the Rings takes an unapologetically positive view on death and mortality. It doesn't fight against death or fear it as some evil. Yes, it clings to life, but accepts the inevitable. All souls must pass eventually. To close this idea up, I want to point out one of the positive aspects of Amazon's Rings of Power. Yes, I know I'm usually critical of Season 1, but the example I have actually fits with what I love most about the show. It looks beautiful, and the music is moving. I'm not talking about the scene in the first episode where Elrond and Galadriel stand before a tapestry of a ship sailing in the west, and Elrond has some really poor dialogue describing the journey to Valinor. Intoxicating? Really? Such an ugly word for such a beautiful idea. Anyway, later on in Episode 1, Galadriel is on a ship heading into the west. Now, I'm not a fan of the whole ceremonial undressing by servant elves. That was just a little weird. I get the symbolism of it, but it was just executed, just, like, cringeworthy. But as the ship sails on, the gray rain curtain parts, and a swift sunrise greets the elves, with a sweet singing on the wind. The Valinor theme is one of the more powerful, in my opinion, from Rings of Power. But Galadriel turns aside and dives into the ocean, remaining in exile in her quest to avenge her brother. In the show's story, at least. Okay, let's bring this all together now. From the chapter title to the first paragraph, Chapter 8, Fog on the Barrow-Downs, is all about death. The Barrow-Downs are burial mounds, and Frodo's dream is about the passage from mortal life into the afterlife. But as we'll see, not all tales about death are as sweet and beautiful as Frodo's dream. Before we go on, I certainly hope you are enjoying this episode. If so, please leave a review and 5-star rating. Your review could be as simple as Bells64's 5-star rating, who said, quote, Love it! Any and everything you want to know about Middle-earth. Or as lengthy as Emily Ann's 5-star review, which I won't read entirely, but she says, quote, I'm loving learning about all the roots for the stories I enjoy so much. Well, thank you to you, Bell64 and Emily Ann. You can leave a review in your podcast app or head over to ringspodcast.com/reviews to leave your own. I can't wait to hear from you. And after your review, make sure you tap that share button and share this episode with a friend. Okay, so I went a lot deeper on the theme of death than I originally intended, and you may be feeling a little impatient and ready to move on, just as the Hobbit's ponies were feeling on that morning when the Hobbits left Tom's house. So let's get a-movin'. Tolkien doesn't give us any final words Tom may have said in farewell, and the Hobbits mount their ponies and start to climb the hill. But then Frodo remembers that he didn't bid farewell to Goldberry. However, at that moment, they hear singing ahead, and they are able to say goodbye to her. And because I can't resist, I found another wood, water, hill pattern on the first page of this chapter. Tom bursts into the chapter, quote, whistling like a tree full of birds. Okay, that's wood. Later, we hear Goldberry's voice, which, as we explored two episodes ago, always sounds like water running downhill. In this chapter, we hear it as, quote, a clear call rippling down. And when they see her, Tolkien gives us a water metaphor, quote, a light like glint on water of dewy grass. And lastly, where do they actually meet Goldberry? Quote, up the last slope, and they looked out from the hilltop. The pattern is right there. Wood, water, hill. I don't know, maybe I'm seeing patterns that aren't actually there. Isn't there a term for that? But really, it's repeated so much, I don't actually think that I'm making this up. But anyway, again with Goldberry, we have a lot of connections to light. The sun is shining, light flashes around her, and in her presence, the hobbits are able to see far in all directions. Whereas a few days before on the hill in the forest, they couldn't see much. Again, Goldberry is the inversion point of opposites, like what we explored an episode or two ago. She gives them a final blessing, and the hobbits begin their journey north, trying to find the road. But soon the fog rolls in, and the hobbits will be consumed by the Barrowdowns. We'll get to that right after this break. We're not done yet. If you like this episode, please leave a review and share with your friends. And remember to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
The Hobbits head north as best as they are able and soon crest the hill with a slightly indented but rather flat top. A few interesting things happen to the hobbits on this hill. The hobbits are glad at the progress they've made, but as Frodo looks to the east, he seems to have some feeling of foreboding, as on many of the hills there are these standing stones which, quote, point upwards like jagged teeth out of green gums. This metaphor of teeth and gums bears a little exploration. To me, it appears that the Barrow Downs, those hills filled with burial mounds, are like a great mouth, open and gaping, and ready to eat the hobbits alive, and to consume and digest them. And that is pretty much what happens. Because it's hot, the hobbits sit on the east side of the stone, where it seemed to be a bit cooler because it was, quote, as if the sun had no power to warm it. Hint, this is a bad omen. Two red flags. The east is the source of evil at this time in Middle-earth. Sauron's lands and fortresses are generally considered the east, first in Mirkwood near Lothlorien, and then further south in Mordor. And second, if the sun, that mighty sun created from the light of the two trees of Valinor, is unable to warm something, especially on the eastern side, then you probably should not consider that a safe place to rest. But the hobbits don't know that, or at least they didn't think that through, and so an overpowering sleep overcomes them. When they wake several hours later, they find that they are, quote, upon an island in the fog. The sun is sinking and, quote, a cold gray shadow spring up in the east behind. All of this comes to a head as the hobbits feel, quote, as if a trap was closing about them. Because a trap indeed is overcoming them. And it is only just beginning. Frodo's dream from earlier in the chapter, a pleasant and heartwarming view on the journey from mortality to the afterlife, finds a stark and jagged contrast now. The dark has closed around him. He is bewildered, and as if to signal his transition, he finds dark shapes, quote, like the pillars of a headless door, two huge standing stones. He realizes he is alone. He is separated from the others. He feels gloomy and miserable. It's at this point that the horror starts to kick in. Standing before a great barrow, he feels very cold, and the wind from the east is, quote, icy. But as he asks out loud for his friends, where are you? He receives a chilling and unexpected response, quote, here, I am waiting for you. He's incapacitated, but sees, quote, a tall dark figure like a shadow against the stars, which has, quote, two eyes very cold. The dark figure grips him, and, quote, the icy touch froze his bones as he blacks out. These scenes, to me, powerfully illustrate the theme of death through the use of overwhelming darkness and icy coldness, thus creating a pervasive sense of dread. The Barrow Downs, with their jagged stones that look like teeth, evoke imagery of a monstrous mouth ready to consume the hobbits. This metaphor underscores the idea that death is an ever-present, looming threat in Middle-earth, and really in our Earth, in mortality, capable of swallowing life without warning. The eastward orientation of their resting place, traditionally a source of evil in Middle-earth, and the unnatural coldness they experience further amplify that sense of foreboding. The sun's inability to warm the stone hints at a malevolent force, suggesting that death's grip is cold and relentless. As Frodo becomes isolated and lost in the fog, the story plunges into a deeper sense of horror. His earlier dream of peaceful afterlife stands in stark contrast to the dark reality he now faces. The transition from warmth and light to darkness and cold symbolizes the journey from life to death, marked by confusion and despair. That chilling response to Frodo's question as he's calling out for his friends, here I am waiting for you, is a stark reminder that death is the inevitable end for all mortal creatures. I see in the Barrow-wight's icy touch that froze his bones a visceral representation of death's paralyzing power, highlighting the fear and helplessness that sometimes accompany it. This passage emphasizes the negative aspects of death through its portrayal of darkness and coldness, but it also brings a sense of isolation and terror. Frodo's experience with this shadowy creature with two cold eyes encapsulates the fear of the unknown and the chilling finality of death. Through these elements, Tolkien masterfully conveys the theme of death as an omnipresent and formidable force, one that casts a long shadow over the journey of the hobbits and the broader narrative of Middle-earth. But the horror is only beginning, and we'll get to that next time. Thank you for wandering Middle-earth with me today. My friends, if you enjoyed this episode, let me know by subscribing, leaving a review, and sharing with your friends. Follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Lore of the Rings Podcast. or feedback on the show, please email me using the link in the show notes. Until next Thursday, remember, not all those who wander are lost.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Are you ready to dive deeper into Tolkien's world? If you've ever struggled to read The Silmarillion, I've got just the thing for you. I've created a free guide packed with my best tips to help you conquer this epic book. Whether you're a seasoned reader or tackling it for the first time, this guide will make your journey through the first age of Middle-earth more rewarding than ever. Head over to ringspodcast.com to download your free guide today. Your adventure deeper into Middle-earth starts now. Visit ringspodcast.com today for your free guide.